Morning, everybody.
Morning.
What a treat this is. Bright sunshine. I'm amongst friends. I don't know about you, but for the last few months, I've felt like a mole climbing out of a tunnel and realizing that the world is still there. For 2 years, it's like we were in a tunnel and we didn't see each other, we didn't do anything, and all we could do was watch the news and despair. But now, look at this. Look at this. There's a new song in our hearts. Isn't it a joyful day? Wonderful stuff. I can remember the day that I was baptized. Rosie and I were baptized together at a church in Texas. And that day marked the beginning of my preaching career. If you can call it a career, of my preaching adventure. And that was the day that I remember God put something new into my heart as a result of me turning to Him. And we're reading a psalm today that's all about that. Psalm 40 is all about what God does in us, through us, and around us. And it's a cause for great celebration to consider the works of the Lord. And we'll just work through it bit by bit, and we'll consider what each bit brings to the big story. So Psalm 40, I'm reading out of the English Standard Version, but other versions are very close to this. It doesn't matter what you're following along with. Well, let's just begin. It's a psalm that falls into two halves. Sorry. Oh.
So if you're going to go through it in bit by bit, we'll send the children out now. Sorry, if you're going to read the psalm, then they can go afterwards.
I'll read the psalm. I'll read it top to bottom, and then we'll do bit by bit. I waited patiently for the Lord, writes David. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog. He set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and hear and put their trust in the Lord. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after a lie. You have multiplied, O Lord my God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts towards us. None can compare with you. I will proclaim and tell of them, yet they are more than can be told. In sacrifice and offering you have not delighted, but you have given me an open ear. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Then I said, behold, I have come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me, I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. Behold, I have not restrained my lips, as you know, O Lord. I have not hidden your deliverance within my heart. I've spoken of your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your steadfast love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. As for you, O Lord, you will not restrain your mercy from me. Your steadfast love and your faithfulness will ever preserve me. For evils have encompassed me beyond number. My iniquities have overtaken me, and I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head. My heart fails me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. Let those be put to shame and disappointed altogether who seek to snatch away my life. Let those be turned back and brought to dishonor who delight in my hurt. Let those be appalled because of their shame who say to me, aha, aha. But may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who love your salvation say continually, great is the Lord. As for me, I am poor and needy, but the Lord takes thought for me. You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. Amen. Children, can make your way to wherever you belong now. I was telling the story not too long ago now. It's a great story about my church in Dallas, the church that I pastored in Dallas before we moved back to the UK for this radio ministry. And I initiated this children's teaching moment, and you know, because I had a weird accent, at least I had a weird accent in Texas. Because I had a weird accent, we called that moment Baffle the Brit. And the children, once a month, were allowed to just come and sit on the stage, and I'd sit on the stage with them, and they were allowed to ask me any question they liked. It didn't matter how crazy it was. If they could baffle the Brit, then that was fine. The church would have fun with that for a week. Well, one little girl, Antonia, just the most delightful little girl. And she came up, she sat right next to me, and with big blue eyes, she looked up at me and she said, Pastor Terry, why did God even bother making Goliath? A great question. But it keeps you on your toes, that sort of thing. And so May the children have a wonderful time chewing over what the Lord has done in this psalm today, and may they learn a new song too. So, this is a psalm that falls very neatly into two halves. The beginning, first perhaps 11 verses, is all about singing praise and thanks to God because He is a saving God. He has delivered. He has saved. Just come with me, the first three verses. This is David writing. We don't know the exact circumstances of why he's writing this particular song, but he wants it to be entered into, shall we say, the hymn book of the children of Israel. So this is a psalm that he wrote for the people to learn and to understand so that they knew where he was coming from. And he said, I waited patiently for the Lord, verse 1. And guess what? He inclined to me, and he heard my cry. A wonderful thing to say about God as you open a song. I waited for the Lord. I was clearly in trouble. And you know what? He heard me. He leaned into me. He inclined to me and heard my cry. And why did I cry? Well, because I was in the pit of destruction. I was in a mess. Everything was disaster. He drew me up from that pit of destruction, out of the miry bog. Can you imagine that? He's covered in mud and clay and sticky, and he's been in a mess. And he set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. Wonderful thing for God to do. What a remarkable thing when you think about it. Because, you know, we all get in a mess. In fact, we're born in a mess. And we stay in a mess until God sees fit to raise us up. He hears our cry. As soon as we come to an understanding that we're in a mess and that we stand faulty, guilty, messy before God, as soon as we come to an understanding and we cry that out, He inclines His ear to us. And He works His work of salvation. Now, everybody in this room has a different mess that they were pulled out of. Everybody has a different mess. Rosie and I were talking about this just the other day, and we were working through this psalm together, just talking about it on the sofa, and Rosie starts to tear up. She's just welling up inside because between you and me, she had a mess. She was in an awful mess. She was in a desperate place. And it was out of that desperate place that God heard her cry and lifted her up and in mercy and grace set her on a broad place. Now, I came from a mess too, but it wasn't a mess like that. It wasn't a mess that you would look at and say, oh, they're in a lot of trouble. They're all messed up. I was in a much more dangerous and treacherous place than that because I was smug and self-sufficient and self-confident. That's a much more treacherous place to be. Because when you're in a mess and you know it, it's easy to just say, my life is all messed up. But when you're sort of okay and you're sort of, by and large, a good neighbor, when you're self-sufficient, self-confident, a little bit smug with yourself, that's a much more treacherous pit to be stuck in. Let me tell you, that is a dangerous place because that's a place of complacency. That's the place where you don't feel any pressure to do anything about it. That's the place where it doesn't even occur to you to cry to God and establish the truth between you. I'm messed up. It doesn't occur to you that you're messed up when you're just sort of smug and complacent and self-sufficient and you're doing okay and you've got some friends and life's kind of all right. Treacherous place to be. If you're there today, if that's how you feel about yourself today, if you just feel like, I'm doing all right, I'm a nice guy. I've got some friends. I don't really murder anybody particularly. If you're there, if you're in that place of complacency, you're in a treacherous, nasty, dangerous pit, trust me. And that's the pit that I was in. But just the same way, when I realized it, as soon as I noticed it, as soon as it occurred to me through God's prodding that that was the mess that I was in, once again, God inclined His ear to me, reached out His hand to me, He set me up on a broad place. And in response to that, in a reaction to that, Rosie and I were baptized at the church we belonged to in Texas. And that day, I stood up, I came up out of the waters of baptism, and I preached my first sermon. That was the new song that God put into my heart. That's what I was to do. It was about growing up with a bicycle that didn't have a chain on it. Because that I did. I grew up with a bike that had no chain. We lived on the top of a hill, and down at the bottom of the hill was the village. And the chain came off my bike once, and then Dad, who was a precision engineer, he could have fixed it. He never put the chain back on because he knew that if I had a chain on my bike, I'd be gone, and I'd be down the hill, and the next thing you knew it, I'd be crossing the motorway or something stupid like that. So he never put the chain back on my bike. So I could go along just by sort of scooting it, and I could go down, but I could never go up. And so I don't know if he'd really planned it that way, but it was the way that it occurred to me, that I grew up with no chain on my bike. I could never make any progress. I could never make any headway. But as soon as I came up out of the waters of baptism, I said, this feels like I've just put a new chain on my bike. Suddenly, when I press the pedal, something happens. Suddenly, when I want to move in that direction, even if it's uphill, I can go. I can do it. I am enabled through Christ to do what he's called me to do. And you know, that's like getting a new song. He put a new song in my heart. David sang a song of praise because, verse 3, he put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. In other words, when David sings his new song, when David shares the story of his deliverance, when David says, look at the pit I was in and look where God has me now, others will pay attention. Others will notice. Others will see. And others will say, I need that. I want that. How do I get that? So this song of praise that God gave to David, in turn, brings attention to God, because the song is about God. The story is about God. It brings attention to God that God put a new song into David's mouth. It wasn't just a song for David's benefit. This was a song about God's reputation, his reputation as a saving God, as a God who delivers. Well, blessed is the man, verse 4, who makes the Lord his trust. That's how you receive a blessing, is to trust in the Lord. Blessed is the man who doesn't turn to the proud, those who go astray after a lie. Don't turn to me when I was smug and self-sufficient and complacent. Don't look to me for good advice. Don't look to me for direction. Not while I was in the pit. I would bring you down to just as such a dangerous place as I was in. No, don't follow those who chase after the lie of self-sufficiency. Don't follow those. But God, you have multiplied your wondrous deeds and your thoughts towards us. None can compare with you. I will proclaim and tell of them, yet they are more than can be told. You will never run out of verses for your song of God's deliverance. You will never run out of verses because he is a saving God. There is always a new example. There is always a new thing to talk about when it comes to God. We went to visit a dear lady. She used to volunteer for our ministry. She used to come to the office once or twice a week and stuff envelopes for us and things like that. And we went to visit her, Rosie and I both, on Thursday morning. And she'd had a hard time during COVID, and a dear friend had passed away, and her nearest sibling, her brother, lives in Northampton, long way away. And so we were just asking her, you know, how are you doing? And do you get any visits? Does anybody come and see you? And she said, well, not many people. She said, but the funny thing is, the people who do come, even my Christian friends, they don't seem to want to talk about God and what he's done. They don't seem to want to talk about spiritual things. They'll tell me what they did for their last holiday, or they'll tell me where they went for dinner the other night, or they'll tell me all sorts of things. But they'll never talk to me about God. And she said, and that's what I really want to hear. I want to hear how God is working in people's lives. I want to hear their stories. I want to hear what God is up to, because I've been all alone for 2 years in my cottage without any visitors. And when people come now, I was just aching for them to tell me about what God is doing. You'll never run out of verses for that song. He's always up to something. He's always doing something new. There's always something going on with God. But do we get blind to it? Do we get so wrapped up in life that we don't notice those little things that God is doing anymore? Does it just sort of glance off us? We should be paying attention. I had lunch with some folk this week, and the first question that came out over the table was, so what have we been praying for, and what has God done? What a great conversation starter. What a wonderful way to begin a conversation over a meal. So what have we been praying for, and what has God done so far? Those are the verses for this new song. Those are the verses of God being a saving God, a delivering God, a God who, I've called him this before, a God who interferes. He doesn't stand off. He doesn't just watch. He's not a spectator God. He's an interfering God. He gets into our lives. He fiddles with us. He changes our priorities. He changes our aspect. He changes things about us. And when he does, that's a new song verse. It's exciting to hear them. Don't ever be shy. When you go and visit someone, don't ever be shy to tell them what God's been up to. Don't be shy to tell them that you have a God who works in your life and in history. He's not over there somewhere. He's here. And he's at work. Never be ashamed to speak of that. So you'll never run out of examples. So what's the appropriate response if we have this saving God? Verse 6. You would think, well, we need to get busy and show the proper marks of respect for our saving God. And go through the formalities and behave ourselves and dress nice. Do the rituals of faith, the ho-hum rituals that stop meaning anything after a while. No, that's not what he wants. That's not what he wants. He doesn't want this semblance of superficial sacrifice. No, he doesn't want the things of sacrifice unless the sacrifice is you and your life. That's what he's looking for. And that's what David says. In sacrifice and offering, you haven't delighted in that. That's not what you want. But you have given me an open ear. You've given me the capacity to listen to your will. You've given me the capacity to tune in to your frequency, God. And so burnt offerings and sin offerings you haven't required. I simply said, I'm here. I've come. In the scroll of the book, it's written of me, I delight to do your will. I want to do things your way, God, because you are a saving God. And I remember that you saved me. And that accordingly changes my thinking. I'm not into ritualism anymore. I'm not treating you as a lucky rabbit's foot. No. I'm giving everything I am back to you. I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. I am yours. I am completely yours. Well, if this is all true, and I believe it to be true of David, he certainly was a man after God's own heart, then when do we stop singing the new song? When are we supposed to stop praising God and just let it rest? Well, David says, I just won't shut up about it. I've told the glad news of deliverance. I've told them what you've done. In the great congregation, in front of all the people, I've told them, I haven't restrained my lips. I haven't held anything back. As you know, O Lord, I haven't hidden your deliverance within my heart. It's not my own little secret thing. It's not something you did that is my little secret treasure. No. I've told everybody about it. I won't stop talking about it. I've spoken of your faithfulness. I've spoken of your salvation. And you have not concealed your steadfast love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. I am talking God up big because of what he's done. And I won't stop. When do you stop? You stop when you leave this building? About noon on a Sunday afternoon? When do you stop talking up God big? Do you stop Monday, perhaps at the bus stop? Do you stop when you get to work? Do you just keep a low profile? Or will you just keep talking about God and his goodness and his tendency to save, his propensity to rescue? Will you not just keep talking about that? As for you, O Lord, verse 11, you won't restrain your mercy from me. Your steadfast love and your faithfulness will ever preserve me. Sort of the end of the statement, end of the half. Confidence in God, great faith in God, because he's seen God work. He's seen God deliver him out of the mess he was in, put him up on a broad place, and now he just wants to tell people about that. Well, where was your mess? Where was your pit? Mine was in smug complacency. I didn't need God. I didn't choose to ask God for anything. I was completely self-sufficient, completely self-directed. That was my miry pit. Rosie's miry pit, different pit, but she was still in a miry pit. And the thought of God reaching and saving her and setting her on a broad place brings her to tears every time she thinks about it. Where's your pit? And are you glad that God has rescued you from it? Are you? Honestly. Are you really glad? A smile and a nod would help. Are you? Well, then are you talking about it? I hope so. I hope so. Don't be shy. People love a good story, and if your story is a salvation story, they deserve to hear it. Share it. Let them know. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be fancy. You can do it in 40 seconds. I was a mess. I was just self-absorbed, self-determining. I was a selfish individual. But you know, God reached in and he changed me. And he changed my priorities. And he changed my thinking. And he changed my value system. And he changed me into someone who wants to serve him and work for him and present his reputation in the world. I'm not worried about my reputation anymore. I'm concerned about God's reputation. That's my testimony in 40 seconds. You can do that at the bus stop. You can do it at the supermarket checkout. You can do that in 40 seconds. Doesn't have to be elaborate. It's not a bloodletting. You don't have to go into the gruesome details. Just explain somebody in a few words that you belong to God now and that that prospect delights you. What's wrong with that? Yes? Yes. Okay, good. Moving on. We have to remember that, however, life is not a bed of roses, and that's where we go now. Just because God has delivered us and saved us doesn't mean we don't need his help anymore. It's not a one-time does-all when it comes to God. He continues to rescue us. Sure, there is that movement from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. That's a one-time, first-time salvation moment. But he keeps coming to our rescue. Even after that, it's not like we don't need him anymore. And it's not like he doesn't care about us anymore. He nurtures us along. He nudges us. He prods us. He prompts our conscience sometimes. And he sort of shuffles us in a heavenward direction, becoming more and more like his son Jesus every day if we pay attention. I remember David said, "You've given me an open ear. You've allowed me to tune into your frequency, Lord, so your law is written in my heart. And I'm on board. But it's not always a bed of roses. We trust God, we should trust God at least, to remain faithful even in the hard times. Look, some hard times have come. Verse 12, evils have encompassed me beyond number. My iniquities have overtaken me. He's become more and more aware of his own depraved nature. And I can't see, because all of these memories, all of these regrets, all of these issues, they're more than the hairs on my head, and they cloud my vision, they cloud my judgment. I'm tripping up over these things. My heart fails me. We trust God to remain faithful, even in those times. When the enemy tries to whip up our conscience, when the enemy tries to stir up those long, long forgiven, long ago forgiven regrets and sins and mistakes, the insults that we hurled against God when we were in the pit, the insults that we worked against one another when we were in the pit. Long, long forgiven, taken care of, dealt with on the cross, satisfied by the shed blood of Jesus in his grace and out of God's mercy, dealt with. But sometimes the memories come up and that paralyzes us. Sometimes the memories come up and you think, how in the world could God have saved me? Is it true? Did it happen? Is it even possible? And yes, yes, it is true. And yes, it is possible. And you need to cling to him even when the times get hard. David says, you know, even when these memories and even when his iniquities that are forgiven come up against him and cloud his vision and cloud his judgment and cloud his thinking, he says, be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me, verse 13. Make haste to help me. Clear me of all of this. Clear this away from my consciousness, from my life. He starts to hand off. He starts to hand off some responsibilities. He starts to hand off some things that he would like to happen if he ruled the world. He starts to hand them off to God. Let those be put to shame and disappointed altogether who seek to snatch away my life, he says. We're giving that to God. God, I know what I'd like to do. Because David was a hothead sometimes. You remember the incident with Nabal and Abigail? And Nabal had offended David, insulted David, frustrated David, and David determined that it was Nabal's time for judgment, and he was going to go kill him. Abigail, Nabal's beautiful wife, wise wife, intervened as peacemaker, and for the time being saved Nabal's life, but saved David's reputation. David was a hothead. He was a hothead. And David is saying to God, I want you to handle the people who come against me. I'm not going to do it. Lord, you put to shame and disappoint altogether the ones who seek to snatch away my life. There are people out there, Lord, who want to kill me. I could deal with them. I have an army at my disposal. But Lord, I want you to deal with them. You do it in your time and in your way. Help me. Deliver me again, Lord. Continue to help me. Let those be turned back and brought to dishonor who delight in my hurt. The ones who are scoffing and mocking and just having fun with the fact that David is in trouble. We've all got people like that in our lives. We've all got people who secretly rejoice when the Christian comes a cropper. We all know people who like to point the finger and say, oh, where's your God now? Where's your God now? He hasn't come to rescue you yet, has he? You're still messed up. David says, God, I'm leaving them to you. Let them be turned back and brought to dishonor. Lord, I leave the shaming business to you. Take care of them. I won't. And let those be appalled because of their shame. Let them be ashamed of themselves who say to me, ha ha ha, ha ha, yeah. You're not all you're cracked up to be, are you, David? You're not all of that, are you? Let them be ashamed. Lord, bring them to an understanding of just exactly what they're doing when they dare to scoff at one of your children. On the other hand, may all who seek you, not the scoffers, not the mockers, not the ones with evil intent, but the ones who seek you, let them just rejoice and be glad in you. That's us, by the way. If you have faith in Jesus Christ, that's us. This is our rallying cry. Let's rejoice in the salvation that God has given us and say continually, great is the Lord. There he is again. Won't shut up. Won't stop talking about his God and how wonderful he is. But as for me, a little touch of realism at the end. I'm poor and needy. I can't do this, Lord, on my own. I can't do this by myself. But the Lord takes thought for me. He watches over me. He cares for me. And you are my help and my deliverer, O Lord. I'll never stop singing that song. I will always be looking out for new verses to sing. But I need your help. Don't delay, O God. Even though you delivered me out of the pit, you saved my soul for eternity, even though the blood of your Son, Jesus Christ, has cleansed me of all unrighteousness, there's still trouble because it's a messy world. And Lord, I still need your help day to day. I still need your help hour to hour. I still need your help breath to breath. We all do. Now, first and foremost, if you are unaware that you are in that pit, if you have not cried to the Lord for salvation, you need to give that some serious thought, because that is a treacherous place to be. That is just going nowhere. But on the other hand, if you have cried out to the Lord, and if he has saved you and redeemed you, and if he has moved you from darkness to light, out of the pit onto a broad place where your footing is secure, then tell people, for goodness sake. Don't stop talking about it. It should be on your agenda. It should be at the front of your mind. And like I say, you don't have to get elaborate. You don't have to get grisly about it. You're meant to be joyful about it. And if you carry yourself with joy, and if you carry yourself with confidence and poise, and if you carry yourself with dignity and integrity, people are going to ask. And you might remember that the Apostle Peter writes about this in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12. And when anybody asks you, when they ask you, because they've noticed your demeanor, they've noticed how you always seem to have a good spirit about you, they've noticed how you always seem to be optimistic, helpful, enthusiastic, joyful, that's what we call it. I've noticed this about you. What is it? Then be ready to give an accounting for the hope that is within you, but do it with grace and tenderness and forbearance, so that you don't make an enemy the first time you speak. Just say, I was once in a really bad place. I was once in a mess. And God delivered me from that. He rescued me from that. And so all I can do now is just give the rest of my life to him in thanks. And that's why I do what I do. Pray with me, please. Our Father and our God, help us to live such lives among the mockers, among the scoffers, among those who intend us harm. Help us to live such lives of integrity and decency and joy that they notice. Help us to speak with confidence about you and your saving grace. Help us to put it into plain words that people can accept and understand easily and quickly. Help us to be able to give an account for the hope that is within us, so that your kingdom might increase and that we might add new verses to our new song. In Christ's name, amen.